Hey everybody, my name is Stephen Wells. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephen!
By the grace of God, good sponsorship, meetings like this, I haven't found it necessary to drink since October 29th of 2000. All right, hold on. I guess it's been told me to share in general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I was born in Bemidji, Minnesota. I don't know why you guys are doing that. I moved 2 days later. We moved around a lot in my family. I don't know why. Just no real good reason, I think, you know. But when I was a kid, I was born into a Mormon family. God was always really big. Nothing wrong with that. God was always really big in my family, you know, when I was a kid. You know, it was always what's God's will. You know, I went to this class in church. It's called CTR, Choose the Right, and, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, I remember when I was trying to do God's will and not mine, I was happy. I was happy, and I felt secure. I felt safe, you know. I didn't feel like anything in the world could hurt me. And, you know, I felt different in school. You know, I'd go to school and be standing in the lunch line, and Jimmy would be talking about, I'm a Lutheran, and, you know, Tony would say, well, I'm a Catholic. You know, what are you, Steve? Like, I'm a Mormon, and they you know, and I always thought that's why I feel different, you know, and they'd kind of be like, well, my dad says Mormons, blah blah blah, you know, and so I tried, you know, I tried really hard not to let anybody know about that, but anyways, skip ahead a little bit. I guess when I was nine, we were living in this town, Cass Lake. It's Leech Lake Indian Reservation by Bemidji, and my parents got divorced. I was about 9 or 10 years old, and up until then, you know, there was structure, foundation, consistency, you know, all that stuff, you know, and that when they got divorced, you know, it all just fell. You know, my dad was out, and my mom was at the casino all the time. We lived like a mile away, and so she was there, you know, that was her job, and so she was always there and stuff, and I got to do whatever I wanted to do, you know, and I started hanging out with Bemidji for weeks at a time, you know, in the summer with my cousins, and it became very important to me then that you know what they thought of me. You know, I remember the first time I ever hung out with my cousin. I smoke, and well, I smoke too. You know, he's like, "Well, go next door and get a pack of cigarettes." So I, you know, went next door, little gas station, Bill's gas station. Kept a pack of cigarettes, and you know, had my first cigarette, and you know, that's just because I need to be accepted, you know, and it became very important to me that you know, I started caring what everybody else thought of me, and you know, God started to get further and further away. See, around that time, you know, I started stealing, I started smoking, I started doing all these things that when I was a kid, you know, that I was told not to do, and I liked it, you know, I liked it. I had my first drink when I was 10. Me and my cousin went into this grocery store in Bemidji, busted open a 12-pack, shoved it in our pockets, and walked out, and you know, continued that until the 12-pack was gone. And they lived in these slum apartments. Their dad is a slumlord, and we slept in this camper, right? Just a little like 4x8 camper with a couple bunks in it, and we always slept in there. And there was these kids there. We had tons of cigarettes because we stole cigarettes every day, you know. So we had cartons upon cartons of cigarettes. And after the beer ran out, you know, I didn't really drink any of it. I had one sip. I hated it, you know. But I made them think that I was still drinking it, and they weren't looking. I poured out, you know, and ooh boy, you know, woo, I feel goofy, you know. Just started acting like a boob, just so, you know, so they would think that I would, you know, that I'm the man. And so we traded these kids' cigarettes for their parents' beer and stuff. And you know, I really didn't get anything out of drinking then. I was like, I'm not going to do this. You know, this is gross. And so eventually we moved again, moved to this town called Audubon, and you know, things were going okay. You know, things were all right. Yeah, I hear you, man. But we lived in the trailer court in Audubon, and things were going all right. You know, as school was, you know, okay. I guess I should, you know, mention, like, I'll go back a little ways just to kind of explain how I am. When I was in fourth grade, this was before my parents got divorced, and you know, everything, and God was still kind of big in my life. I was in the gifted program, you know, academically or whatever in school, and there's not a lot of respect there, you know, so. So my parents got divorced, and I started being mean and swearing at teachers and stuff. And then they asked me to be in anger management class, and I was like, yeah, all right, you know, because people were scared of those kids. And I was like, yeah, I'm in, you know. There, baby. And you know, that's the way I think, you know. And I quit, you know. I could have done both, but I was like, no, man, I'm just gonna be a bad dude from here on out. And so I kind of did that. And in Audubon, you know, let's get back to Audubon. You know, my school was starting to, you know, become less important and stuff. And I didn't really, you know, drink, you know, up until this point. But I just, you know, I needed attention bad, you know. And I'd be sitting in class, and me and this other kid would throw pencils at each other and just pretend like there were grenades and stuff and get kicked out of class. And I always had to go talk to the principal. And I started getting suspended a lot. And around around this time is when I started drinking a little bit. You know, I started, you know, just wherever I was, you know. And I kind of thought I was a social drinker. You know, I could drink a pint and, you know, I'd be fine. You know, I wouldn't really feel nothing. You know, and, you know, I remember the first time I caught a buzz, though. I was drinking with a couple of my sisters, and I was drinking Bacardi. They were drinking Bacardi Limon, and she gave me a couple of drinks, and I slammed them, and I felt something, you know, and it felt good. And I just felt free, you know. I felt okay, and she took the bottle away from me, and so she went to the bathroom. I found it, and I slammed it, and, you know, continued to get kind of drunk, and I licked an ashtray and threw up. And that was, you know, that was it, you know. I loved it, and I kind of stored it away for future reference. We moved again to this town called Bijou after that. And, yeah. There. When I lived in Bijou, okay, now my cousins, the same cousins that I always hung out with in Bemidji, were living there at this time too with their mom. And I remember this is, you know, kind of stupid, but they told me, okay, don't talk to anybody, just keep your mouth shut, right? So I was like, okay, you know, whatever. You know, and I wanted to make friends and stuff. They moved away like a month later, and I still did it. You know, I didn't talk to anybody. I hung out in my room, and I smoked a lot of weed. And this is where it kind of got bad. My grandma just died. Two days after my 14th birthday, my grandma died. My mom moved us up to Bijou, and I just became very lonely and isolated and depressed and very suicidal. And I started to write poetry. And, yeah. You know, and I remember the first couple of things I ever wrote was all about suicide, you know, all about suicide and just really lonely, depressing things. And, yeah, baby. Yeah. What do you say? Okay. And she just said everything I wanted to say. Well, you know, just life had just, you know, started getting kind of bad. And I was a really fat kid, you know, and people teased me and stuff. And around the time I was living in Audubon, I slimmed down, you know, and I had girlfriends and stuff. And I was kind of popular, and, you know, I was funny and stuff. And I moved to Bijou, and I stopped, you know, being all these things. And I started smoking weed and getting munchies and getting fat. And, you know, I got very insecure. You know, I couldn't talk to people. And so when I went to school, you know, I wore all black. Had, you know, relatively long hair at the time, you know, little homemade tattoo and stuff, and, you know, and I wanted to be mean. You know, I don't want these people to talk to me because, you know, not because, you know, I'm gonna hurt them. You know, that's what I tried to portray, but, you know, it's because they're gonna hurt me, and you know, and I just can't do it. You know, and so I you know, I acted really mean. I didn't talk to anybody. Never, you know, I'd gotten in a lot of trouble. You know, teachers would say stuff, and I would say stuff, and they would ask me to leave, and I would throw a garbage can, and, you know, I always had to do something big. And after that, my mom and dad had been getting together, you know, getting together and breaking up for, you know, up until, you know, just kind of relatively recently. But my dad was living with us at the time, and he moved out, and I moved with him. I said, there's my chance, you know. It's Bijou. Bijou's my problem, you know. Got to get out of Bijou. And so I got out of Bijou, and I went back to Audubon in a different trailer, and I got together with the people I was with before, and they were drinking, and they were having fun. And, you know, I started doing that, too. I, you know, started drinking as much as I could, you know. And at this time, you know, I think alcohol saved my life, you know, because I was ready to kill myself. You know, I really was. You know, I just, I hadn't had enough of life and stuff, and I, you know, started drinking, and things were good when I was drinking. You know, things were all right. You know, I felt okay, and I could talk to girls, and, you know, I was, you know, more than the guys that were around me and stuff. And, you know, I was the man when I was drinking. I was funny, and I was charismatic, and, you know, I could spout off poetry like it was nothing, you know. I always had this line, you know, I'd walk up to girls and tell them, you're the essence of beatific structure. And I just thought that was profound, right? And they loved it, you know. And I could just there, you know. I could come up with this stuff when I was drinking, you know, like just like it was nothing, you know. And so, you know, it made me feel good, and that's why I did it. School, you know, and the other, I don't need school. I remember I had this letter at home. Okay, Patrick. I had this letter at home about we had this karaoke dance at school, and I was completely sober for that day. And we had this karaoke dance, and I'm a big Doors fan, and I sang "People Are Strange" by the Doors, right? And I, like I said before, I need a lot of attention. I need all eyes on me. So I borrowed everybody's necklace that was there. So I had this huge chain of necklaces, and I got up and I started jumping around and screaming and stuff because I was bored. And so I started doing this, and I threw a chair. And there's this letter, though, at home that, you know, Patrick told me to mention this. That's the only reason I'm doing it. But there's this letter, Steve's behavior included but was not limited to attempting to sing while spinning in circles. let's see, wrapping the microphone around himself, refusing to surrender the microphone. unfastening his pants, making several rude and sexual comments to a female staff member, and spitting a mouthful of water in her face, and that's kind of, you know, how I, that's just kind of how I get, you know, I really want a lot of attention. And the way I looked at it, man, is like, man, I'm Jim Morrison, you know, I am Jim Morrison, you know? And I really thought I was too, seriously. Like, I remember sitting with my sister one time in the bathroom, and we just gotten, you know, just whoa, you know. And she doesn't remember this. I asked her about it, but I'm holding onto the counter like this, and I'm looking in the mirror, you know. I looked at her and I said, "I am Jim Morrison," and she, huh? You know, for a long time, I went through this phase where I thought I was Jim Morrison. I'm almost out of it. Getting there. But, you know, 'cause Jim Morrison had it. You know, he had it. You know, and he was smart and he was crazy and stuff. And that's what I wanted. And anyways, so I don't know why I'm talking about that. But I started drinking a lot. And throughout my whole drinking career, I've always, you know, what, you know, it's not really about alcohol for me, you know. Per se, well, I drink one drink and I get really drunk, yeah, but whatever you got, you know, I'll take whatever you got. You know, you got pills, you know, give me some. I was big on pills, you know, I like pills, and you know, just anything that's around, you know, I'm gonna put it in me, because I don't like me, you know. I don't like to be me, I don't feel comfortable being me, and when I'm taking this stuff, I don't have to be me, you know. I can be whoever, I can be, you know, just like Jim Morrison, or just like, you know, Tom Cruise or whoever, you know. I can be anybody else I want to be, and you know, up until a point, you know, it was great, you know. But it started becoming, you know, I got, you know, expelled from school. You know, I went to another school, got expelled from there, dropped out of another school, and you know, didn't have nothing to do all day, you know. So I just kind of hung out, didn't get a job, and I was, you know, just very, you know, not very productive. You know, you might say, you know, I didn't sleep until 4 o'clock. And at the age of 17, you know, I was drinking every day, wasn't going to school. You know, I'd wake up and, you know, I'd have to get my fix. And you know, my dad was there, you know, or the day before, so I might try to get $10, you know, because I only need $10 to get drunk for one day, you know. Get me a liter of Black Velvet and a pack of USA Golds, and I'm good to go. And I, you know, because for me, you know, at this point, I, you know, the friends that I was talking about earlier were gone. You know, I didn't feel like I could connect with anybody. You know, I felt very alone, you know, and, just, you know, very not comfortable. Like every waking second, you know, every sober second that I spent was like a huge panic attack. You know, I'd wake up and boom, there's all this pressure, you know, and I felt it, you know, and my head was spinning and I couldn't take that, you know, so, you know, I had to get something in me. And after a while, you know, just getting drunk wasn't cutting it. And, you know, I'd black out, you know, it's the only way I could do it. And so when I was 17 years old, you know, I blacked out every day and, used to sleep, you know, my dad would kick me out or I just wouldn't want to go home or, you know, I'd sleep on the streets and stuff. And I slept in like this, this 6 foot long, I don't know, 5 feet deep hole by the school, which Mike later informed me was my grave. And, that's where I was, you know, pee all over in it and garbage and just nasty, you know, but it was out of the wind. And, that's kind of, you know, that's where my life had went. I remember when I wasn't drinking or even when I was, I'd be thinking to myself, how did I get here? You know, when I was a kid, you know, everything, you know, the future looked great. Everything looked good. Everything was good. You know, everything was, how did I get here? You know, just scary, you know, I was scared and, I don't want to be this way, you know, and alcohol wasn't cutting it. And so, well, I figure, you know, well, you know, there's this girl and, you know, maybe she can fix me, you know? Yeah. You know, 'cause alcohol ain't doing it. The pills ain't doing it. You know, weed, sure. No, man, that's not cut anymore either, you know? And so, you know, so I hooked up with this girl and, continued to drink the way I was drinking. And her dad was an alcoholic. His name was Steve. He left her when she was like 6 years old or something. She used to tell me all the time that I was an alcoholic. I was like, yeah. So, you know, I know this, you know, I know. And, So I expected her to fix me and, you know, the relationship was all about me, you know, me. And, you know, it was always how I'm feeling and what she could do for me. And, you know, all this is just selfish, you know, and manipulating and all this stuff. And, eventually, you know, it stopped working, you know, 'cause she only had one thing I wanted and, you know, and it stopped working, you know, like everything that made me feel better stopped working, you know, and so I'm working at this job. I work in a graveyard shift at Stop and Go in DL, and I'm figuring, you know, well, you know, I saw the Doors, you know, and Jim Morrison goes to the desert and he, you know, takes some peyote and has a vision quest, you know, and whatever. So I should probably go to the Badlands, you know, find God, find me. And I was totally unprepared. You know, this is alcoholic decision making. I called in about an hour before I had to go to work. You know, I'm not going to be able to make it in, ever. I'm going to South Dakota, you know, or, you know, and I'm going to be gone for a long time. And, so I, you know, got a bus ticket to Sioux Falls, you know, not knowing that the Badlands were on the other side of South Dakota. I didn't know that there was like mountains and ravines, and I thought it was, you know, desert. And so I wore sandals. I'm hitchhiking across South Dakota, just, man, it's boring. And I'm going across and stuff, and then I packed up a bunch of books, and then that was it, you know, packed up books and sandals. And I went there, and I crawled over these mountains and stuff, you know, and I got lost for 3 days, and that was the scariest thing I've ever been through, you know. You know, the whole time I was freaking out, and, you know, this isn't how it's supposed to be. And anyways, you know, I planned on drinking water and eating lizards. When I was out there, didn't bring no food or water or nothing, you know, because, you know, live off the land, you know, get back in touch with nature, and that's whatever. And but I thought that I'd learned a lesson there. I thought, you know, if I can learn to appreciate everything, you know, everything, good or bad, you know, I'm good, you know, because when I got back into town, you know, I was appreciating being alive then, you know. When I found my way back to the road, I really appreciated that. And I got back into town, and I called my girlfriend, and I was like, I love you so much, I learned so much. And she was like, I got to go, click, you know. I didn't appreciate it, you know, I didn't appreciate that too much. And I called everybody I knew, finding out where she was, who she was with, what she was doing, you know, so on and so forth. And I found out she was seeing my dealer, and I didn't appreciate that very much. I got back in a DL. It's the 4th of July. I'm hurting on the inside. Oh, I'm going to get drunk, you know, for a long time. And I'm not going to remember anything because I got feelings and I need to drown them. And I'm in town for an hour, and I walk up to the gas station and back with my sister, and we're having a barbecue and stuff, and cop goes driving by, stops, backs up. I just knew, you know, well, Mr. Wells, we got a warrant for your arrest. Yeah, of course. You know, I didn't appreciate that. And it's just like, you know, 4th of July, and here I am, you know, looking out my little tiny window and watching people walking down the street and having fun. And I, you know, and, you know, after that, you know, I just screw it, screw everything. And I just went totally, you know, on a mad binge for a long time. And I sobered up about 9 months later, something like that. In October, that's not 9 months, whatever. I sobered up in October and went to treatment and did that, and I loved treatment. It was good. You know, I didn't want to leave. I was safe again, and I hadn't felt that in a long time. I'd tried to reconnect with God, and I hadn't felt that in a long time either. And I sobered up, and, you know, as soon as they kicked me out of treatment, you know, well, they didn't kick me out this time, but as soon as I got out of treatment, you know, and I had to experience the real world again, you know, I felt a lot of fear and stuff. And I came to this group, and I saw these people here, and they're all dressed up, and they were smiling, and I hated every single one of you, especially, you know, Calvin. Oh, man, I hated him. He shushed me one time. And so I was, you know, you guys probably didn't know it, but I was, you know, every time I came here, I was at war, you know, it was battle time. And, you know, I'd come here and stuff, and I hated all of you. And I wasn't doing anything in sobriety. I was very unhappy in sobriety, miserable, you know, and, you know, it came to a point, you know, about 8 months later, I'd went to jail, in sobriety, you know, I was hanging out with people that were getting high and drunk all the time, you know, and I was the guy who was doing this, and the guy who was doing this, and, you know, and just horrible, you know, and, you know, and I wanted to drink so bad, you know, I'm not going to do it, I'm just not going to do it, you know, and I'm very miserable, and, you know, I wanted to die, you know, I don't think I felt that much pain when I was drinking, you know, I just way too much pain. I didn't have anything to take it away. And I wasn't working a program. I was coming to meetings once in a while, and that was it. And I wasn't working the sponsor. Wasn't doing any of this stuff. And I was going to kill myself. You know, I was sleeping on one of my sister's couches. And I was going to grab my stuff, go stand in front of a train. You know, and that was it. I was just going to end it. And the big book was laying on the table, and I wanted to grab all my stuff, so that she thought that I was just leaving somewhere. You know, because I didn't want anybody to find out for a little while at least. And I just opened it up, and I saw a vision for you. And I was like, well, what do they have to offer? And the very first two pages, 151 and 152, explained where I was exactly. You know, coming in, you know, as ex-problem drinker comes in and you know, tells everybody that he's feeling better, he's working better, life's everything's going better, when on the inside he'd give anything for a half dozen drinks. You know, and that was me, you know, and I told my family this all the time, you know, that everything's great, you know, and I love being sober, and on the inside I was dying. And later he goes on to say he's like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his own spirits. He'll eventually try the old game again, and you know, thank God I didn't have to do that, but it just really kicked me in the butt, you know, because it said, you know, he will know miserableness such as few people do. He will be at the jumping off point. He'll wish for the end. And that's where I was, you know. I was right there, and I was going to die. You know, I'd planned on dying that night, and I read that, and I, you know, well, obviously I didn't do it. I called up this guy, and asked him to sponsor me, you know, and asked him to bring me to meetings, and I started doing the deal, and you know, and I didn't necessarily believe in it, but anything had to be better than what I was doing, because I couldn't drink, because I knew that sucked, and I couldn't stay sober, because I knew that sucked, you know, and. But I started, you know, even though I hated all of you, I started shaking your hands, and I started, you know, asking how you're doing and stuff. And I've come to love every single person in this room, you know. Everyone in this room, you know, these guys are my family. And what I have today, you know, my sister Sherry, there she is. When we were drinking, I really didn't feel much, you know, and I tried not to. And there were, when we were kids, we had this bond. You know, I could look at her, knew what she was thinking, and we just had this bond, you know, and I loved it. And when we were drinking, it was gone. You know, it was gone. She was just somebody that I knew, and sobering up, you know, I've got that back with her, and you know, and oh man, and you know, she told me today that she got accepted into college, and you know, that's huge, you know. Because I remember when she was out there, man. That wasn't pretty. And she's, you know, she's such a lady, you know. And you know, stop that. But, you know, and through her, you know, like, there's been a couple of times because I get bad cases, you know, screw it. And, you know, I'll look at her and you know, she's just such an example of what this can do for somebody. And I'll stay around, you know, just for that one more day. And anyways, how much time do I have? Okay. But yeah, when I got a sponsor, got a home group, started to go into meetings, started going through the book with my sponsor and doing this stuff, you know, just doing this stuff, you know, things started to get better. You know, things just, you know, started to get a little better. I moved in with some alcoholics, Howie and Tony. My sponsor told me to move in with some alcoholics. So with my best thinking, I picked Howie and, you know, of all people. That's my best thinking. I'm just kidding. But and you know, I learned a lot of things, you know, just by living with alcoholics and hanging out with you guys and you know, doing what you guys do. And I don't believe that I'd be standing here, you know, because I'm very suicidal by nature. And you know, I don't think I'd be standing here if I wouldn't have got to know you guys. I don't think I'd be standing here if I, you know, didn't try to do the things that I see people ahead of me doing, you know, trying to work with new guys and trying to bring it into somebody else's life and you know, just doing the things that you guys do, save my life, you know, and I'm very grateful for that. And I want to thank Mike for asking me to speak. And with that, I'll sit down.